Yishus Moreno, Rav Shmita, Le'ilo Nishmas, Reb Yosef Ben Reb Eloza, Rabinovitz, Mechaim Aruchim, David, on the outside of your dear father. And we also remember our dear friends Reb Avrom Tzvi Ben Mordechai Yaakov, Ashley Klinger, who was an active and very helpful member of this year. Experiencing a miracle, we might first ask, what is a miracle? We might spend all our time deciding what a miracle is. I mean, if you win the national lottery jackpot, you might feel that is a miracle. It might not go against the laws of nature. On the other hand, the statistical probability of winning is so remote that you'll regard it as a miracle if something happened to you. And so various people experience various things to feel as though they have been through a miraculous event. Listen to a story in this book about Dr. Adler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. There was a yeshiva bacha who went through 17 doctors, many of them eye specialists, who were baffled by a case of eye irritation. It started when this patient was in yeshiva in Israel in the 1970s. After months of pain, he consulted a stream of opticians and doctors, and nothing helped, and it became worse and worse. The 15th doctor he visited thought it might just be psychological. He then went to a top Hadassah professor who lived 6 months of the year in Scotland, because he was a Scottish man. His name was Professor I.C. Michelson, note his initials. He received an award from the Queen of England for curing African children of blindness, but he could not find anything wrong with this yeshiva bacha. So, realizing he can't remain in Israel, he came back to England and wanted a letter to go to Moorfields Eye Hospital. So just to get this letter, he visited Dr. Adler. He told Dr. Adler the story of what all the previous 17 doctors had said. And without even examining this boy, Dr. Adler said, "Do you suffer from dandruff?" This boy thought he was an idiot. He's just been through all these different specialists and professors. He said, "You're stroking your hair when you're learning, and dandruff is falling in your eyes." Mm-hmm. Turned out he was right. Yes. That bacha was me. So I felt it was miraculous, particularly various family events which were happening at that time, which compelled me to come to England. I felt as though Hashem was guiding me. But the question is, was it really a miracle? So the halacha is, if you go to a place where you've experienced a miracle, you say a bracha, Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, She'osa Li Neis Bamakom Hazeh, who has done for me a miracle in this place. Now you might say that what happened to me wasn't really against the laws of nature, and certainly my life had not been in danger, but it felt for me like a very miraculous event. But maybe we'll talk about a different experience. What about once my wife was driving on a motorway quite fast, and she saw a metal bonnet of a car flying towards her windscreen, and there was nothing she could do. She couldn't avoid it because there was lorries on the other lane, and she just stubborned, and suddenly a huge gust of wind blew the thing up in the air and passed over the top of her car. Well, miraculous. How did it happen? You go, "Oh, well, laws of nature, it's just the wind."
What about the fact from the car behind?
Seems to have travelled across them as well. A former member of this shul by the name of Charlie Rotstein, I'm sure many of you know him, he was once driving his car into Highfield Avenue from Golders Green Road, and he was about to turn right, and he pressed his foot on the pedal, on the gas pedal, to move, and somehow the car just didn't move. He couldn't understand why, when suddenly, at that moment, a huge vehicle was overtaking him on the right-hand side, and had he turned right, there would have been an awful, fatal collision. But he pressed his foot on the accelerator, but the car did not move. And when I went back to him to remind him about this event, which he told me about years ago, he said, "Yeah, but that was nothing." He said, "When our baby was once looking rather uncomfortable and irritable, we took her out from the cot, and 10 seconds later, the whole ceiling caved in into that cot, and it would have been fatal." Do we call that a miracle? I would think so. Does it go against the laws of nature? Well, it's just the fact that it happens at that time. The Ramban writes, that miracles can be natural events, not simply unnatural events, but it's the timing. And with Norman Taylor's permission, I'd like to just remind you of a story that happened to Norman, which he told me about. Norman was swimming in the sea at Sandbanks, which I believe is near Poole in Dorset, and he wasn't aware that there was a very strong tide and current there, which was suddenly engulfing him. Water was filling up his lungs. Tell me if I'm saying it wrong. He could not even shout out for help, and he felt like that's the end. Baruch Hashem, a young man by the name of David Obermeister, you remember his dear father who was coming regularly to this shir, Louis Obermeister. David Obermeister dived in and saved him. Now that is not just something which is amazing. You might say, well, it's not against the laws of nature, but that was a case where it was an issue of life and death. And when you go back to that place, says the Chaye Odom, in Klal Samachay, Sif Dalud, if something like that happens to you, then you make the bracha with the shame and Malchus She'osol Ines B'mokam Hazeh. You hear that, Norman? Every time you go back to Sandbanks, if you want to go back there, you have to make this bracha. Unless you've been there in the last 30 days. Says the Chayodom, Noflo Lov Chayo, or if a wild animal fell on top of you, Uborach Mimeno, but you managed to escape from it, or Niskbatu Harba Bnei Odom, or lots of yobs come around gathering you, looking violent, Vivrichua, and you managed to run away and escape, Kivin Shibalohat Solohoyo Sheyomos, without such being saved, one would have died, Yevorev Shosoli Nesbamok Vashem Omalkos. So according to the Pesach of the Chayodom, I don't make such a bracha when I see Dr. Adler's surgery, because I wouldn't have died had I not been saved. But it was, for me, it was an amazing event. So I can say, without the shame and malchus, Baruch she'osoli neis b'mokom hazeh. And there is a custom that a person who experiences a miraculous event should make a seudas hodor every year. A meal, a seudas mitzvah it's called, to recount and describe to others the amazing things that have happened which warrant a thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I once went into a yeshiva dining room. I was visiting friends of mine in Kol Torah Yeshiva, and there was a man there who was making a seudas hodor. He had been on a ship called the Dunera, which was populated heavily by some 2,000 people. Afterwards, Winston Churchill said it was a grave mistake, but many German Jewish people and others, even Nazi sympathizers, who in this country were called enemy aliens. They had come from Germany, we want them out of the way, so they were sent packing on this ship to Australia. And two port torpedoes were fired at this ship by Nazis. One torpedo did not explode. The second torpedo, which was fired at this ship, did not hit it, because a huge wave threw the ship up in the air. Can you imagine what a big ship this was? It had 2,000 people on board. It was thrown up in the air, and the torpedo passed through underneath. And so this man was making every year a seudas hodor to thank Hashem for being saved. So, what are the eight halachas? Obviously, when you escape from danger, you make the bracha of Enchin Gomel. Hagomel Chayov and Tove Shekamale Likol Tov. Although Chazal ordained this for when one crosses the sea, or when one's been in a midbar where it could be dangerous, or if one's come out of prison, or if one has recovered from a serious illness. So you might say these events are not miraculous, but they're amazing, and we're grateful to Hashem that we are saved from something which could be called Cheskas Sakono. And Hashem is kind to everybody, even to those people who might not deserve it. But if you have been in a situation where it feels more miraculous than those four events, then you will say this bracha she'osol ines b'mokom hazeh. Women as well should be benching gomel if they have an escape from something which was close. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch writes this in Samachay, Sidur Yavatz. If they don't want to say it in front of other men, they can get their husband to say it. What if you see a place where a miracle took place for the whole Jewish nation? Kriyas Yom Suf. the walls of Jericho falling, but you might not know the exact location where these things happen, so you won't be able to say the bracha properly. But if you would know where such a thing happened, you say she'oson nizim labosenu b'mokom hazeh, in this place. And there is a custom to give tzedakah in place of what would have been a korban todah, a thanksgiving offering, if the temple would exist. And the korban todah, there's lots of bread, and the Sfona Vayikra says that there's a reason why there's lots of bread in the korban todah, is that you can share it out with other people, that you can tell other people about your experience and describe it, because it's a parsumei nisa, you're publicizing the miracle. Certainly, this month, in the story of Hanukkah, we are doing a parsumei nisa, we're publicizing a miracle. The mere fact that you put a light in your window outside the front door or whatever is publicizing a nes that happened. The nes of the Pach Shemen. We say Al HaNisim on Hanukkah. We say Al HaNisim on Purim. What miracle happened on Purim? What unnatural event occurred which went against the laws of nature? I don't know the answer to that. We say the Jews were saved. And that was a miracle, against all odds. But it was an eis nistor. It was not a public event of something unnatural which went against the laws of nature. But nevertheless, we say Al HaNisim. So with Kriyas Yamsuf and the miracles of coming out of Egypt, we have the Seder night that is publicizing a miracle. Fine, but that went against the laws of nature. But Purim didn't go against the laws of nature. So what was a miracle? How do we define a miracle? The Ramban writes that a miracle is not necessarily something which goes against the laws of nature. At the end of Parshas Bo, he says, it's not only the Nisim HaGadolim HaMufrasim HaOdom Modeh B'Nisim HaNitzorim as well, that it's not only the famous publicized miracles which go against Teva, but also the hidden miracles. Shehem Yisod HaTorah Kula, they are the foundation of the whole Torah. She'ein Adam Chelik B'Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, a person hasn't got a Chelik in Torah. Ad She'namin B'chol Devareinu Mikreinu, She'kulam Nisim, Ein Bo'em Teva U'minhag Shalom. There is no such thing as Teva, as nature. We call it nature, but really that is not a Jewish concept. Alright, we use the term Minhogo Shel Olam in the normal manner of running the world. Right? But we don't say something is according to nature or against nature, because everything is V'yad Hashem. As we say in the davening in the mornings, V'adisecho Shebechol Yamimonu, on the miracles Hashem which every day He does for us. My son told me once of a Rav who said that if one realizes what a miraculous event it is to be able to go to the toilet and say afterwards, Asher Yotzar, that the holes in the body are closed but open just at the right times, if one would realize how miraculous such an event is, one would phone home afterwards to say one is okay. That's a miracle. So, V'anisecha Shem Chol Yamimonu, V'aniflo Secho, and the wonders, Shetavisecha Shem Chol Eis Erev Mavoka Soroyim, night, evening, morning, and afternoon. So that is to give us an idea of miracle. And if you look at the Al HaNisim on Hanukkah, it doesn't say anything about the oil. If you look at the Al HaNisim, it talks about Bimei Matisyob Ekoin Godel Chashmonov and the wicked Greeks tried to Lashkichom Torah Secho, to make us forget our Torah. But against all odds, we have Tobar Achamecha Rabim or Matzolem Besarosom, Rafto Srivom, Danto Estimum, Lakatis Nosom, Musatik Romiad Haloshim. They had tens of thousands of soldiers against us, and we had very few, but we won. So the whole of Al HaNisim is talking about the victory. Was that unnatural? Alright, it was against all odds. It was statistically very slim, such a chance of winning. But it doesn't there talk about the miracle of the oil. What is it about the miracle of Hanukkah then? And then we say it was a teshuah gedola, and afterwards we could reinstitute the temple service. But we're talking there about we were able to light the menorah again. And in fact, that we lost 8 days of Sukkot, so that was the 8 days of Chanukah when they reinstituted. So what happened in the story of Chanukah? We talk about the miracle. Where does it talk about the miracle of the oil? Hundreds of years later, the first reference to the miracle of the Pach Shemen of the oil is recorded, buried in the second chapter of Gemara Shabbos Bama Madlikin. My Chanukah. What is Chanukah? That they didn't have enough oil which had a hechshav in the Kohen Gadol. And then they found a little bit, and it should have only lasted one day, and it lasted for 8 days. But this was really only seen by a few individuals. It was a private sort of miracle. It wasn't seen by many. But the war against the Greeks, that was a public event. So we're really celebrating the miracle of the Milchoma. So why is it that the war of the Greeks was toned down afterwards? Sorry?
So I was going to say, does that mean at the beginning they didn't like menorahs, everybody, then? That suggested before.
Well, the Gemara records what they were doing. Don't forget the Gemara is a series of...
Well, we had the temple then, so we were able to relight the menorah in the temple. So it seems, although I don't have any direct evidence of this, it seems that the practice of lighting the menorah in one's house did not happen straight away, although it was a takanos chazal later. And if you look, and the Mishnayis, the period of the Mishnah, yeah, does it talk about the mitzvahs of Chanukah? No. Well, it does, actually, in a very obscure place. In Bava Kamma, it talks about damages which are caused by if you pass by a shop with your camel with flax on it, which is flammable, and it lights up as a result of the shopkeeper's Chanukah light, which is put outside his shop, then the shopkeeper is not responsible, whereas usually during the rest of the year, he would be responsible. That is the mention. There is another mention of Chanukah in the Mishnah, and that is in Bikurim, which talks about the seasons of the year. It mentions whether the fruits were picked before Chanukah or after Chanukah. Unbelievable. And the Eidim going out, I mean, but there's nothing written about the mitzvahs of Chanukah. They toned it down. There is a school of thought which was that Chazal wanted to tone down the idea of the victory of the Milchoma because people might mistakenly believe it to be Kochi Va'otzem Yodi as a result of our own doing. And we don't like to show our being victorious. So if you look at the miracle of Purim, the Monis Halevi writes that we celebrate really the day of deliverance, not the day we fought, and that's why Shushan Purim is a day later, the day of deliverance. Why? But follow Vecho Al Tismach, we don't want to glorify ourselves over our victories over our enemies. Because they had their downfall, that is not a reason to rejoice. That's a non-Jewish concept. We are only celebrating because we had salvation, not because the enemies fell. Hence on Pesach, we don't say the full Hallel for the whole of Yom Tov. We stop after the first or second day. Why? We don't want to feel gloating over the downfall of our enemies. All we want to do is celebrate that we had freedom. That's the important thing. So the Meshech Chochma writes in Shmos, in Perek Yud Beis, he said, Hashem stopped the angels from singing at Kriyas Yom Tov when the water was split. Why? Because the Egyptians were drowning. Hashem said to them, these Egyptians, they are my creations. They're human beings. They're created in my image. You don't have to rejoice because they're drowning. Yeah, okay, they got it coming to them. They asked for it. They had a punishment. Okay, Midas Hadin and so on and so forth. But we don't have to rejoice at the fact that there are people who are drowning. That is not something to sing about. We do not celebrate our war victories. That is not the Jewish way. Chanukah is a story of rededication, that we were able to come back into the temple. But not too long later, the temple was destroyed. And so, when Rebbe was editing the Mishnah, he felt like well, do we really want to celebrate this as a victorious thing when afterwards we had the Bar Kokhba revolt and other sad events relating to fighting? So the whole story of the Milchoma was toned down. But by that time, Ala Nisim had already been drafted as part of our tefillah, as part of our davening. But afterwards, when the Gemara comes along, which is hundreds of years later, doesn't mention the Milchoma at all. It mentions only the oil. So there you get an interesting move of what is something which is being celebrated. The original celebration was something which was not against the laws of nature. And in Gemara Tanis and Chafei, Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's daughter, it talks about her by mistake lighting her Shabbos lights on vinegar instead of oil. And Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa said to her, don't worry, because Shabbos had come in and she was crying and she realized the lights are not going to burn. He said to her, just like Hashem gives the power of flame to burn on oil, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to give the power of flame to burn on vinegar, should he so wish. And the lights carried on burning, miraculously. So, what is it which we call a miracle, experience a miracle? We've spoken about experience a miracle personally. Well, I myself feel as though what I went through was a miraculous event. Okay, maybe my life wasn't saved as a result, but I can still nevertheless do some sort of thanksgiving. I asked the Shaila at the time with my eye experience, and I was told, do something once. Don't have to do it every year. Do something once because you spread the story, it's a wonderful thing. But if you do it every year, it becomes like a neder. But there is the custom, if a person's life was saved, then one celebrates it every single year. Hear that, Norman?
I saw on YouTube last night the Lubavitch Rebbe speaking about celebrating Thanksgiving.
Oh, right.
And he said, definitely, he said, there's nothing wrong with it, and it was a serious occasion engendered by the original settlers who were God-fearing, and even if you're not God-fearing, people celebrate it, and he said there's no harm whatsoever in celebrating Thanksgiving.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Alright, well, I'm going to mention something about the Lubavitch Rebbe in a few minutes, but in our lives, or for most of us, perhaps the most miraculous thing which we have seen was the Six-Day War. Now, you might say, well, you know, Israel has a good army, they're brilliant soldiers, the Mossad is very intelligent, they get their information, so you might think, well, it's nothing unnatural about all this. But if you listen to some of these things which happened, just a few quips. Once I mentioned a story told to me by Avram Greenbaum, a former member of this shul, about an Israeli soldier who was stuck in the Sinai Desert. He had lost his battalion and he was all alone, and the heat was coming down from the hot sun. It was the month of June, and he was really, really thirsty, and he felt as though he would soon die from lack of water. And suddenly a voice behind him sounded and said, here, drink this. Mm-hmm. And he turned around, there was a man with a long white beard who put a big casket of water in his hand, and he drank it, and he turned around and this man was gone. And he's sure that it was Eliyahu HaNavi. From a secular newspaper, there are stories of the Six-Day War. When Shechem was conquered, it was the largest area of Yehuda v'Shomron where there would be tens of thousands of inhabitants, likely to be the most difficult and the bloody battles of the war. And the Israeli army, well, what they did was, quite cleverly, was they moved in from the east instead of the west, because the tanks were stationed on the west, because the Arabs were expecting the Israelis to come in from there. But even so, you might say that's not miraculous, but when they came in from the east, the Arabs not only were tolerant of them, they seemed to be welcoming them. And they thought, this is odd. It turned out they thought that they were soldiers coming from Iraq. Anyway, but strange as that might seem, they did start shooting when they realized it was Israelis. But these Arabs who had sworn to fight until their last drop of blood, they suddenly had a terrible fear on them that they were Jews coming in to their town. The Arabs were heavily armed, but they just hid their weapons. They raised their hands up, flew white flags of surrender, and they had, well, the fear of God on them, despite their hatred. The story is told by Rav Nachem Kasher, Sichu B'chol HaNiflo Sof, There was a huge ammunition pile, which there was a direct hit on, but the Arab shell did not explode. It remained perched atop a pile of Israeli shells in the truck. A cab driver called Israel, who was drafted to fight in the Six-Day War in the paratroop unit, came to the Straits of Tehran. He said, "We landed like spoiled tourists in the airport. The Egyptian regiment just fled before we were visible. There was nothing logical about it. Suddenly an Egyptian half-track appeared before us, filled with soldiers, mounted with machine guns. There were 18 of them, and there were two of us. We had only light weapons with a few bullets. We couldn't turn back, and we stood there in despair. But the shots did not come. Their truck came to a halt. There were 18 armed soldiers, and they all looked petrified. And we were just two soldiers. So I shouted, 'Hands up!' And they put up their hands. And then I asked the Egyptian sergeant, 'Tell me, why didn't you shoot at us?' He said, 'I don't know. Our arms just froze. My arms felt paralyzed. I don't know why.' It turned out that these soldiers just felt they had no strength in their hands to lift up their guns." Said this cab driver, Israel, "How can one say that God did not help us?" Major General Ezer Weitzman, he was later the president of the State of Israel. When he was IDF Director of Operations, he was asked by Mr. Levanon, the father of a fallen pilot, how did he explain that for 3 straight hours, Israeli Air Force planes, they could fly from one Egyptian airstrip to another, destroying that 400 or 500 advanced Egyptian planes, and the Egyptians did not radio ahead to the next lot to tell them that the Israeli forces were coming. So at the beginning, they managed to avoid the radar, and they could bomb the Egyptian airfields and destroy the airplanes before the war had even started. But why didn't they send a message through to the next lot of Egyptian airfields that they were coming? Ezer Weitzman said nothing, and then he said, "Etzpilo Kippi, this was the finger of God." This was a secular president saying, "Etzpa Elokimhi." The secular Haaretz newspaper summed up the Six-Day War with the admission, "Even a non-religious person must admit this war was fought with the help of heaven." A German journalist remarked, "Nothing like this has ever happened in history. A force including 1,000 tanks, hundreds of artillery cannons, many rockets, fighter jets. They had 100,000 soldiers armed from head to toe, and in 2 days they were destroyed by the Israeli soldiers. No military logic or natural cause can explain this monumental occurrence." That's the Six-Day War, and many of us were zoche to be alive already, born at that time, to see it. Entebbe, maybe if you don't remember the Six-Day War, you might remember that. Now, unfortunately, 3 or 4 people did die in Entebbe. One of them was Bibi Netanyahu's brother. Another was a woman who was taken ill into hospital, and Idi Amin just said, "Shoot her," out of revenge for what the Israelis did. But this operation, yeah, people don't realize that Uganda is almost as far from Israel as London is. It's 2,000 miles. And yet the planes came, managing to refuel in midair, land at the airport and save Israelis who were separated from others. The real Nazi method of separate the Jews, they're the ones who are going to get killed, and the others were allowed to go away. And this is discussed by Rav David Bleich in his Sefer Contemporary Halakhic Problems. When we ask ourselves, what is a miracle? Do we say Hallel? Don't we say Hallel? Is it when lives are in danger or when not? Is it when it affects the whole Jewish people or part of the Jewish people? He brings this into the question of my Hanukkah. What is the story of Hanukkah? When we emphasize that it was the Greek forces who vastly outnumbered us. And do we say it was the miracle of the oil, which was only seen by a few individuals? But let's look at what he says about Entebbe. He says, in some limited circles, the Entebbe operation was seen in a different light than that of a miracle. Some persons influenced by the Turi Kata ideology or Sutmas say that this can't be an agent of divine providence, because the Israeli soldiers, he says, were secular. And this is an argument put forward by the community. In response, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson and Lubavitcher Rebbe pointed out that if you understand what a miracle is in this manner, then you will reach the absurd conclusion that you're not allowed to avail yourself of medical administration of a physician who is a non-believer. He said, further hijackings remain a distinct possibility. He issued a call to this matter that the Torah community should know that this was miraculous and to know how to deal with it in future. So this does bring another different question. And I might say something here which might upset certain people. But Rabbi Yaakov Jacobson, an American Rolf, asked this question about how we see such events in the light of the fact that many of these miraculous events are being carried out by Israeli soldiers who don't keep Shabbos. They might not eat kosher food. He says, when you see an Israeli soldier, what should be your attitude towards him? Because sadly, there are some brainwashed, idiotic people who claim to be fearers of God, who see Israeli soldiers gathering to daven mincha or mariv, and they're throwing stones at them. He said, this is one of the most saddest events of our times. He says, when you see an Israeli soldier, you go up to him and you say, I want to say to you two words. Toda rabba. Thank you. Thank you for putting your life on the line. He said, buy him an ice cream. Give him a hug. But recognize the fact that you are able to sit and learn in your Beis HaMidrash because he is risking his life for you on the front line. He says, in the yeshiva world, the mashkiachs often talk to the yeshiva bachrim about hakoras hatoiv. You have to recognize the good in others. If somebody passes you a tissue box so that you can blow your nose, you have to say thank you. And if you don't, then you should really ask that person for mechila on Erev Yom Kippur. You should ask him for forgiveness that you did not show your appreciation. He said, if these Israeli soldiers would not be there, then every yeshiva bachur would have to get up and fight. Even according to Rav Shmuel Albach, because those samar adam reecho. So if you have to say thank you to somebody who passes you a paper tissue, then all the more so you should say thank you for somebody who's putting his life on the line, somebody who's buried his friends, who's buried his relatives. So this Rabbi Jacobson once gave a talk on this to 2,000 people, and some people walked out. And he asked these people afterwards, why did you walk out? They said to him, because, you know, some of these secularists, he said, they hate us more than the Arabs hate us. So he said to this fellow, I give you a bracha. I give you a bracha that if you get lost, you should get lost amongst some secular soldiers rather than amongst the Arabs. You say that the Arabs love you more. If you get lost amongst the Arabs, they'll throw you down from the top of a hill. They'll cut you up into little pieces. They'll smear their hands with your blood and hold them up to the cameras, as they did not long ago with that lynching which happened. That's what will happen. If you get lost amongst Israeli secular soldiers, they'll give you a hot bowl of soup, they'll find you somewhere to sleep for the night, and they'll bring you back home safely. He said, I hope you get lost amongst the people who hate you more than the Arabs. He quotes the story of Dosson and Aviram. Dosson and Aviram were the troublemakers. They let the mon left over. They were amongst the rebellions of Koach, of Korach. But there was something else about Dosson and Aviram. When they were in Egypt, yeah, they were also the complainers. They were the ones who had a dialogue with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe had killed an Egyptian for killing a Jew. And then he saw two Jews squabbling and he told them off. And they said to him, who do you think you are? And they sneaked on him to Paro. They were the ones who told Paro that Moshe had killed an Egyptian. Paro was after Moshe's life. And who was it? It was Dosson and Aviram. Now, in the story of Beshalach, when the Jews had already left, it says, Paro said, V'amar livnei Yisrael, levuchim heboretz. Who was Paro talking to? The Jews had left. They had escaped from Mitzrayim. Well, they were told to go. I wouldn't say they escaped. Kivorachov. Who were the Jews left behind? So Rashi says, it doesn't mean V'omar li B'nai Yisrael, he said to the children, he said about the B'nai Yisrael. But the Targum Yonason says something different. The Targum Yonason says that he was talking to Dosan and Avirov, who said, we're not going with. They didn't want to bother coming with. They were Rishoyim Gemurim, they were Abikosim. They hated Moshe Rabbeinu. They did everything they can to rebel. But Dosan and Avirom did not die in the plague of Choshech like the other wicked Jews who wanted to stay behind. Why not? Why didn't they die in the Makas Choshech? And he says the reason was because they were part of the Jewish police force. And they were hit by Egyptians when they did not want to make the Jews work harder with the bricks and the straw. They wanted to stop Moshe, Paro's edict. They wanted to protect the Jews. So they took a clap. They were hit by the Egyptians for the sake of the Jews. He said, by that zechus, because they were hit so that the Jewish people would not be hit, that was their reward. They were Rishoyim. It says in the Pasuk, Vayomer l'Roshem, Lomo Sakerecho, he said to the wicked man, Dosan and Avirom. They were wicked. They were Abikosim. They hated Moshe. But they were saved from death. Why? Because they took a hit from the Egyptians for the sake of the other Jews. This is amazing. If you've got a secular Jew, and we're talking nowadays not about somebody who hates Moshe Rabbeinu. We're not talking about Rishoyim. We're talking about people who grew up Tzedek Shenishva, in an environment where they just don't know. So they don't keep Shabbos or kosher. And they take a hit for the sake of other Jews. He says, doesn't that deserve some special reward? And there's something even more amazing. How did Dosan and Avirom then come into the Midbar? If they stayed behind in Egypt, how did they get to the Midbar? Because they were there in the story of Korach. They were the ones who left Mom behind, who wouldn't eat it up. They left it overnight. They were rebellious. How did they get to the desert if they stayed behind in Egypt? The only event that happened between the two was Kriyas Yamsuf, when Pyro and his army chased. That is a chiddush. Rav Yeshua Blei Diskin quotes this Targum Yonason. He says, the other Jews died in Choshech. Dosan and Avirom, they went with the Egyptians who were chasing us. But the Egyptians drowned. He said, yes, but they were saved with another Kriyas Yamsuf. The Be'er Ma'im Chaim says that there were two Kriyas Yamsuf. One was for the whole Jewish people, and another one took place for Dosan and Avirom, for these Rishoyim Gemurim. Why? Because they took a hit for the sake of other Jews, so they were saved. Can you imagine that Hashem split the sea a second time so that they could get through? That they could get through, why? That they should rebel afterwards and be critical of Moshe Rabbeinu? But because they were standing on the line to save other Jews from being hit. All the more so, he says, if that 19-year-old Israeli soldier is ready to die and put his life on the line for you, that person deserves Kriyas Yamsuf just for himself. Rav Chaim Ozer Krajinski, the Achiezer, a very famous Rav of Vilna, he died in 1940, he once met a very famous Hasidic Rebbe called the Ostrovtsa Rebbe, Rabbi Yechiel Meir of Ostrovtsa. He died in 1928. He was an amazing Rav, this Ostrovtsa Rebbe. I've once or twice quoted him in the past. If I ever become Hasidic, it will be because of him.
Somebody lived in South Hill.
Yeah?
That was
the Ostrovtsa. Oh. So once Rav Chaim Ozer Krajinski said, tell me a vort. And the Ostrovtsa Rebbe didn't like talking much. He had this view. His father was a baker, and his father said, you open the door of the oven too much, the bread doesn't get... He always kept his mouth shut as much as he could. And he said, come on, tell me a vort. You're a gavra rabba. You're a great man. So the Ostrovtsa Rebbe said, you don't understand what gavra rabba means. What is a great man? You say a great man is somebody who learns, who is a rebbe. That's not what a great man is. He quoted a Gemara in Makkos Daf Chof Beis. Omarova, Kamatip Shoi Hani Bavloi. How foolish are the Babylonians? Because they stand up for the Sefer Torah, but they don't stand up for a Talmid Chacham. The Talmid Chacham is the person who brings the Torah to life. And there it talks about the Talmid Chachamim, how they interpret the Torah. And one of the things they interpret the Torah with is in Parashas Ki Tse, that a person gets Malkus. When a person gets the lashes, the Torah says 40. Come along Chazal, the rabbis say it's not 40, it's 39. Ask the Ostrov Tzareba, in order to explain how great the rabbis were, why did they have to go to Ki Tse to say that 40 means 39? Before you get to Ki Tse, you've got in Ki Tse, Vosfatem Lachem Imochas HaShabbos, Tisprou Chavishim Yom, you count 50 days. Chazal come along and say, you don't count 50 days, you count 49 days. So why do you have to go as far as Ki Tse to say that 40 means 39? Said the Ostrov Tzareba, an amazing chiddush. He said the reason is because Chazal said that you get one clap less in Ki Tse. 40 hits is really 39 hits. We want to save the Jew from one extra hit. And that's why Chazal and the rabbis are called Gavro Rabbo. Said the Ostrovtsa, Rava was a Gavra Rabba, why? And Chazal was Gavra Rabba, why? Because they saved the Jews from one hit. And that was Doson and Avirom. They saved the Jew from one hit. This is the amazing Chiddush. So if people nowadays have this attitude of looking upon secular Israelis who might not know better, there are two kinds of Jews, those who are from and those who are not yet from. But let's not behave against them with such animosity. Say thanks to them. And when we talk about experiencing a miracle, and we realize that miracles are something which can be the natural because of their timing, because they go against all odds. They're not against laws of nature, but they happen as a result of God's will. That is the essence of Emunah. And nowadays we see the state of Israel, less than 70 years old, is a living miracle. Because not only in the military field, how everything went against all odds, as I've quoted to you some stories, but even economically, in the way the country has become so advanced in its knowledge of medicine and electronics, they've become leaders in the world. And just a couple of months ago, the Deutsche Bank wrote a report and said that the strongest currency in the world after the Chinese currency is the Israeli shekel. Can you believe this? This young country, which is still at war with its neighbours, or most of its neighbours. Just a few days ago, they announced some amazing new treatment for sufferers of multiple sclerosis. Israel is leading where others follow. From 1948, when there were Arab armies four times bigger than our own, David Ben-Gurion said, in Israel, to be a realist, one must believe in miracles. And as we say in our davening every day, V'al-Nisecha she'b'chol yom imonu, that we're talking about miracles are happening every single day in Israel and in Chutzlitz to the Jewish people, and we have to recognize them, and only when we recognize those properly do we have a proper emunah. May you all have a very happy Hanukkah. Thank you.